This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks, Scott, and thanks to you for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now you can give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As the doors are open into October today, whoa, and it is Saturday morning, and we can have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your backyard. How about that side yard or your front yard, or you want to do a specialty garden space? Should you do a raised bed with a board or some kind of composite siding, or can you just raise the area? What do you need to do? And your house plants, should they be coming in soon? Yes, maybe. Who knows? Maybe you don't even like those house plants anymore. You're going to leave them out and see if they can survive. Anyway, what is potting mix, by the way? And should you improve your soil before you do anything like laying sod or planting anything? And how about that shrub over there that keeps overgrowing the space? Should you keep pruning it every two or three times a year? Or should you just kind of get rid of it and get something that's going to stay in that space? Those are the kind of decisions that maybe I can help you with. And your decisions, obviously, is going to be on your shoulders. But I can offer you a little bit of insight with my 40-plus years of experience in the outdoors. This is your show, by the way, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, your car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player is Ashlyn. Ashlyn is producing today, so she answers the phone. She only needs to know your first name when you're calling, and that's pretty much it. She puts it on the computer, and then I talk to you as we go down the list. And, oh, by the way, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since its inception in 1994. Oh, my gosh, that was so long ago. And I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation. Today, after the show, I'm headed to Oakville, and that's where I do what I call a walk and talk. And that's an evaluation of your situation with questions you have. And then I keep my eyes open for things that may be impactful that you have not considered yet. So you can go to my homepage. Well, maybe not. Anyway. But anyway, so you can give me a call, and then we can set up a time where I can get a chance to come to your home. Well, let's get moving. The stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Oh, wow. The sun is barely lighting the eastern sky because it is pretty early this morning. I got up and, you know, had my breakfast early and decided to go ahead and just head out. I can't go out too soon, though, because it's so dark I can't even see the plant material during my good gardening stroll. But anyway, the thermometer in the backyard read 46. Ah, that was pretty cool. And I didn't have a coat on, so I dug out a coat and put a jacket on. And still wearing shorts, obviously, and flip-flops. So I'm not going to give up on that yet. Anyway, northbound on Kings Highway, I passed Arsenal Street. And then I made a right turn into Tower Grove Park. Yesterday, Tracy and I had gone to the grocery store, and on our way home, she said, I want to drive through Tower Grove Park. And I said, well, that sounds pretty good because there's some great stuff in there. We were actually surprised at how many events that were going on at the various pavilions in Tower Grove Park. Various things. You know, it was hard to tell what was what. There was one thing that said it was a private party, so don't you think about coming in here. And as I parked right there at basically Kings Highway in Tower Grove Park entrance off Kings Highway, there's maple trees and ginkgo trees were holding onto their foliage, though some was beginning to drop. The entrance plantings were dominated by elephant ears and some huge yellow coleus. And there was other flowers. I couldn't tell what they were because of, you know, the time of day and everything else. And they were sticking their faces out. And the surrounding lawn had been recently mowed. And as I looked at the house that was right there at the entrance off Kings Highway, there's on the slate tile roof, there's the initials TGP. Any idea what that might be? Tower Grove Park, of course. Cyclone fence, you know, encloses the backyard of this house. And actually, a sign declares this is a private residence. So I'm surprised about that. A historic street leads the way into a circular road that goes all the way around the park through various things. This wedge area also is dominated by a bicolored coleus, and that was kind of dominated by red. But another thing, too, was yellow lantana. The conifers in this area, they were kind of saying, we're going to be holding on to our needles, though we're dropping some right now because of the seasonal thing. And the evergreens, the conifers and things like that just offer a different texture, a different structure to the deciduous trees. The sky was beginning to lighten as the alarm clock for the squirrels and birds. Squirrels were beginning to come down and bounce all over the place looking for food, and the birds were starting to sing. On the south side of between, let's say, Arsenal and, you know, the entrance way off Kings Highway, there is a huge area that has been, a lot of soil has been put and leveled off and everything else. And I think this is soil that's been brought down from the newly developed area, which is up near Grand Avenue. And it's a sort of a series of creeks and wildflowers and things like that. And it's being smooth, so I wonder what's going to be next for this space. Tower Grove Park has some of the earliest childhood memories of mine. Before we moved out to Ellisville in 55, we lived on Flat and went over to Tower Grove Park quite a bit because it was pretty close by. I don't remember walking over there, so I guess we drove, but the area around the Grand Basin was some of my, like I said, earliest memories, where a guy had a radio-controlled boat, and he actually let me play with it for a second. And I was like, whoa, radio-controlled boat. But anyway, Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Give us a call.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us three times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. Yes, I'm calling about a spruce tree. It's a Norway spruce, and I'm getting ready to have some yard work done, and I need to limit up some of the branches on the lower. It's on a hill, and some of the branches on the upper side are laying on the grass. The ones on the lower side are overhanging the wall. What I want to know is, when they limb this up, they need to really get underneath the tree and cut it off real close to the trunk, don't they? Okay, I lost you, so I'm going to listen to you on the radio.
Basically, what they're going to do is they should leave about a quarter to a half inch stub off the trunk, and they can certainly do that, and no sealer or anything. And if the branches are extended and long, probably they're better off to cut them off one third of the length at a time. That way, if you cut it just right at the bark or right at the trunk, it may tear the bark as it falls. So by reducing the weight of the branch, in other words, the length, you're actually minimizing the option or the, you know, the, let's say, the tragedy of tearing the bark, because open bark circumstances is not a good thing for any tree. So I guess he's going to go ahead and take off. Should we go back to Mary? Hey, Mary, how are
please.
You?
Mike, I'm fine, and I am so grateful that I got on the show today, because I have a big need for how to handle gigantic poinsettias. I got them last year from church right after Christmas and put them under grow lights, and they just did magnificently. I put them outside for the summer. Right now I have four almost bushes. I just measured them to tell you what the size was, because I thought you wouldn't believe me. And there's four different ones. The maximum height is 48 inches.
Whoa.
And the maximum width is 40 inches. And I want to know, what do I do to make them go red? I want ready to bring them into the house, or what do I have to do?
Basically, what you got to do is put them in a circumstance where you put them in total darkness for 12 hours a day. And that's about all you can do. And with them that big, I don't know where you're going to be able to put them in a situation
well,
like that.
Well, we've got a basement bedroom that nobody is using now. Okay. So it's warm. So the temperature is going to be room temperature. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, like 70 degrees?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. It's the daylight. What you're trying to do is make a circumstance like where they're native to, which they're native to, you know, southern part of Mexico. And at that time of the year, they have basically 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of night. So you're trying to duplicate that in your own home. So you're trying to put them in a situation where they're going to have no, you know, 12 hours of dark, and then you're going to give them some light.
What about watering them? Should I diminish that, or
you can cut it back some, but you don't want them to get too. You don't want to get them too wet for sure, but you don't want them to get too dry, because as big as they are, hopefully you have some saucers that go underneath the pots.
Some what?
Saucers.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, right. It's a carpeted room.
Okay.
What about fertilizer for them?
Not this time of year. Basically,
okay,
when they start, you know, when the days when you're going to keep doing this for probably 2 months or so, and then when you bring them back out as they start to turn colors, then at that time you can start fertilizing. But now is the time they're basically headed towards dormancy.
Okay, so the water kind of just keep kind of medium, not wet,
exactly.
Not dry.
You don't want to.
And then fertilizer, none now. And then when you bring them out, then start fertilizing.
Exactly right.
Now, my husband was thinking that we could maybe put like a burlap sack over the top of them. But I don't want to do that for fear it'll just like help with bug generation and things.
Well, maybe not bug generation, but the weight of the burlap could certainly start breaking some of the, some of the leaves and things like that. So laying something on top of them is not advisable.
Okay. Now, what about like putting them in a gigantic black plastic bag? We can make the room dark, so I don't have to put something over it. But would it work if people did put like big black plastic bags over them to keep it dark?
Well, it just depends, plastic can really create a high humidity circumstance, and then you might start getting a fungus problem. It may be just a visual fungus, but it may be a fungus that's going to be detrimental.
Well, when I was just measuring them to tell you the sizes, I noticed that one of them has just some white spots. I mean, it's not many right now. Should I water them all real well, make sure I got any kind of bugs and stuff off of them before I go to bring them in?
Well, watering is not going to eliminate bugs. So.
Right, but this is just like white dots. What would you think on a poinsettia that might be and what should I do about it?
Is it on the stem or on the leaves?
On the leaves.
Okay. So,
but it's very few.
Yeah, I would get a magnifying glass and look at them close. Because usually they're not going to, poinsettia is not, doesn't have a tendency to be attractive to, insects in general, even when they're outside.
Okay. So look at that. And if it's nothing, then just don't do any kind of insecticide.
No, you don't need to do that. But if you want to, you can get some horticultural vinegar or something along that line, or neem oil, and just dip it into, or dip a paper towel in it, and then wipe these white spots and see if you can just wipe them off.
Okay. Oh, that's perfect. You have answered my prayers. From now on, I'm going to call you St. Michael.
Well, good luck.
Thanks so much for your time on this.
I'll be curious to know where you're going to put that many of those huge plants in your house.
Well, we're lucky we have a full bedroom. I'm even willing to take the bed down. My
wow,
husband, thank God,
things.
He just walked out of the house and he didn't hear me say it. So, thanks again, Michael.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's see. Why don't we go to Elaine's yard? Hi, Elaine.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Good morning. I have a tree question for you. I'm elderly. My husband's in a nursing home, so I can't do a lot of labor-intensive stuff. But we have a strip along the south side of our house that's only about 10 or 12 feet wide, and it's in full sun, but it's adjacent to a blacktop parking lot. And we had a nice dogwood tree there that was planted in 1986, and it just gradually died. And I thought it was too young to die. My husband thought perhaps the blacktop killed the root system. We don't know that for sure. But anyway, I got a new little Cherokee Chief dogwood and planted it in the fall 2 years ago, and it didn't make it through the winter. So when spring came, I had it removed, and I got a Yoshino cherry tree, which I was so excited to have. And I babied it and took good care of it and probably overwatered it. And then it got a fungus disease. And I sprayed it with a hose-end sprayer on triple-action fungicide. And I finally got rid of the fungus. But by spring, the tree was dead. And I'm heartbroken that I lost a tree. So I want to get a new tree for that spot, but I'm afraid to plant one because I don't know what I should not get. and I wondered if you had a recommendation.
Well, how close is the parking lot to where the tree's being planted?
Oh, maybe 5-6 feet.
That's pretty tight. So,
yeah.
I mean, if when you go into, let's say, retail circumstances like shopping malls and things like that, there really aren't that many trees that are doing very well in that, you know, in that situation.
Right.
So I would say, as much as you want to have a tree there, I would say maybe you should just forget about putting a tree in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I won't have good luck with it because of the space
right.
Limitation.
Mean, you, the earliest tree you had a couple years out of it, but it's.
Well, we had the big old white dogwood since 1986.
Right.
But so, it finally died.
Yeah,
so I've lost a little dogwood and a Yoshino cherry tree, and I just don't know what to put there.
Yeah, I would say, I would be really hesitant about anything. If I was going to try anything at all, you might try one of the magnolias.
Oh, really?
Like a star magnolia or something like that, because they have a kind of a light root system. And maybe, the heat of the asphalt is not going to – that's where the trouble comes in. The asphalt heats up and then has a detrimental impact on the soils. So
I see.
I would say you're just taking a big chance on whatever you put in there.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help so much. Thank you kindly.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, take a look out your window and maybe you got some questions. We've got some phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Mike, I wanted to ask you about something. I read about it years ago and I'm reading articles about it now. Do you have something to write with? I'm going to pronounce what I'm reading. It's a composting thing, but I'm afraid I'll butcher the name.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. HUGELKULTUR. Basically it's a form of composting in the ground, in the area that you're going to plant. And with our Missouri clay and stuff like that, I was wondering, I'm wanting to put in some berries. And I was wondering if that, have you ever experienced that at the garden or know too much about it?
No, I really haven't. But to be honest with you, it's if you're composting in the ground, which is fine, you can do that. But it takes a while before it's going to be composting or composted. So until that actually is broken down and becoming compost, rather than just organic materials, then it's not going to be functional. That's why it's done above ground and then worked into the soil afterwards. So to do it in the ground, that would be, you're talking about several years before you're going to be able to plant.
Well, yeah, that's what they were talking about, the fact that it takes a long time, so therefore it gives nutrients to your plants for quite a while. Because they also throw compost in there too. I just wondered if it was worth all the effort and what you knew about it.
I would say it's not. It's you could play with it if you want, but it's gonna be a play rather than in reality. Above ground compost worked into the soil. That's much better than trying to put in compost and put in just organic material. So in other words, you could take your, let's say, the leaves from your yard or the vegetables that you don't eat or whatever it happens to be that you choose to put into the ground, but it's still going to take it a long time to break down and become, let's say, viable as far as making your soil better than what it would have been if you hadn't put it in there.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it, Mike. I wanted to hear from you about if it was worth the effort. So
I would say it's a roll of the dice, and I wouldn't roll the dice.
Okie doke. I thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure. Now let's head over to Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a question. I get trees from the conservation department every year out of Licking.
Sure.
Little oak trees. They're about a foot tall. And I plant them in very rocky, poor soil conditions. And I was reading on how to fertilize. And some things I read say they like fertilizer for acidic, you know, acid-loving plants, and some say not. And I was wondering what you thought.
Well, they.
I want to kind of help them in this poor soil when they're little.
Yeah, but I mean, poor soil fertilizing doesn't compensate for, you know, bad soil.
So, I understand that.
Okay.
This property is out near Merrimack Caverns, very rocky conditions, and it was logged about 30 years ago. And so there's plenty of oak trees back then, and I'm trying to. Nothing's grown since. You know, elms and cedars have taken over, and I wanted to kind of reforest it with some good trees. But, man, they have a tough time.
Right.
Exactly. I don't know how the first ones got there, but anyway, I just thought I'd like to help them a little bit when I plant them. And some places I read say, you know, regular fertilizer, and some say they like acid, you know, loving fertilizer.
Well, and in reality, they prefer the acidity. But
okay.
In this situation, even if there was historically oaks there in this soil, mm-hmm. to replicate that or to duplicate that reality of history is going to be extremely difficult. And especially by just sticking them in the ground and, you know, and so, you know, in the soil where you said there's cedars and there's elms or whatever else there happens to be.
Right.
The only reason why those are there and other ones are not is because the other ones weren't able to get them, let's say, get a foothold.
Right.
So it's going to be, you can continue to do it, but the fertilizer is not going to be the thing that makes a difference. It's going to be the soil and the root system of the seedlings that you are putting in to be able to get out and, you know, to sort of for the root system to migrate into the soil to be able to not only take up nutrients, but also moisture and other things as well.
Right. Okay. Okay. I thank you.
Yeah. So, and probably what I would do personally is if you're serious about doing this, it sounds like you're just, you know, every year you get some and you put them in the ground. I'd get a couple each year and put them in pots and grow them in pots in your, you know, in your home where you're taking care of them. And maybe make sure that they actually are viable on their own, that they're, you know, in a pot in an ideal circumstance with a potting mix and blah, 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 that they are actually pushing out leaves. Because I know, I mean, the leaves, I mean, they're coming from the conservation department or the, you know, whatever. But
right.
It's still a situation where they might not even be viable, even though in theory they are.
Okay.
So by test growing, you know, some in a pot, and you can see what you can anticipate and what, you know, even in an ideal or more ideal circumstance than where you're putting them, what's going to happen to them.
Okay. I'll try that.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
My All right.
pleasure.
Bye.
And now let's head over to Mark's yard. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I love your show. So anyway, I have a yard sort of patchy in grass, but grass is growing. There's two patches about 8 foot by 10 foot apiece. They're not connected where I cannot get grass to grow or sod. I had sod growing there for a while, about 6-8 months, and then it just died out. And now both areas are bare, just dirt. Where can I get a soil analysis done at?
Basically, the University of Missouri has an extension office in Kirkwood. Take a soil sample to there, and you want to get get soil from about 6 or 7 different places. Don't get any of the, you know, any dead root systems or anything like that. Just make sure it's pure soil, and you want about enough of a Ziploc bag so they can do a soil test on it. So, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. And that way, it may be, you know, a circumstance where those two different spots, you know, have something wrong with them in the soil, but it may be just soil compression, soil compaction, things like that. So whenever you've put seed out or sod out, have you actually improved the soil, or are you just laying the sod on top of, you know, the existing, let's say, bad soil circumstance?
In the sod, I went ahead and raked the area to rough it up and then just watered it twice a day or at least once a day. and the other section, it's a heavy traffic area, so that might be explaining that condition.
Right.
But I have not done any actual fertilizing.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the fertilizing. Fertilizing feeds the plants, but you want to feed the soil, and you want to improve the soil by adding, you know, a couple inches of compost to that, you know, or compost topsoil mixture, and mix it in with the existing soil as opposed to just laying it on top of the ground or something along that line.
And then how do I mix it in?
Like with a rototiller?
Oh, okay.
I mean, you really got to mix it in well. You can't just, like, rake it in because that's not going to do anything. It's only going to go down about a quarter inch. And the root system of, you know, any lawn circumstance has got to go deeper than that. And it only goes deep. When it goes deeper than that, it's got to go to improve soil, not just right at the surface. If it's improved, it's not going to do any good for the, let's say, the root system as it matures.
Okay. And as far as the place in Kirkwood, that's the University of Missouri St. Louis Extension Center, correct?
Yeah, it's near the train station.
Okay. I'll look into that. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And
bye.
Let's head over to another Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Very good. How are you?
I got a couple of quick questions. I got two hydrangea plants. One is a Limelight, the ones that get those cone flowers on it.
Right.
Yeah, well, now they've turned tan. And then I've got another one that's still blooming, and they're both, like, have grown like mad this year, and I'm wondering about how those should be trimmed or when I should trim them.
Basically, you can just cut the flowers off and leave them alone. Hopefully, you put them in a spot where you don't have to be worrying about what size or how wide they get. And so, in other words, not next to a driveway or a sidewalk or the patio or whatever it happens to be. And just leave them alone. That would be the best thing. And you just cut the flowers, the spent flowers off, for an aesthetic standpoint. You don't really even have to do that.
Yeah, the one's by a sidewalk and near my patio, and it's just huge. So
they're summer bloomers, so basically what you need to do is wait till we're coming out of wintertime. Don't do, you know, don't prune them at that time because they're starting to, you know, as soon as they start growing in the springtime, they're setting the flower buds even if it's not really obvious. So this
So coming out of winter, go ahead and...
No, don't prune them at that time. That's what I was saying.
Basically
prune them as right now, from this point.
Oh.
That way, because they're not forming any, you know, any buds or anything at all, and that, you know, this would be the ideal for anything that's a summer bloomer going into winter, fall / winter time is a time to prune, not coming out of winter.
Okay, and then one other quick question. I had some zoysia sod put in an area where I had a swimming pool, and unfortunately I think the grubs got to it. Well, I treated for that. I planted seed in early September, and that's all come in. But I've got some little small spots where I have no grass. I mean, like small, a couple of inches or whatever in between there. Is it best just to leave that go this winter? Or, because I don't want to damage the grass around it.
Right.
Or do I have to treat those individual spots separately?
Well, first I'll tell you, grubs do not do damage to zoysia. So I don't know what chinch bugs do, but grubs do
not. Oh, well, maybe it was chinch, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's a completely different circumstance. So if you do have grubs in that area, and I don't know what kind of seed you put down, it could be. Really, the grubs do major damage to bluegrasses and not to other types of grasses.
Oh, okay. So it probably wasn't the grubs. It's probably chinch bugs then, I guess.
Right. And they can definitely do damage to zoysias. So the little bitty spots, I would say, this is not a carpet we're talking about. So you could go ahead and just leave it and, you know, leave it alone. Have you done any fall fertilizing?
Right. I had already done that, yeah.
Okay,
prior.
So then I would say just kind of leave it alone as we're, you know, the ground is still pretty warm, so if you want to just go out there and rake those spots a little bit and throw some grass seed in those individual, you know, locations, you could give that a try. But the problem with that is newly planted seed needs to be watered, you know, on a regular basis, or else even if you water it for a couple days and you see it start to sprout, you got to keep, you know, watering it for about 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, that's what I did with the original seed that I, when I reseeded.
Right. So I would just leave it alone, and then I would wait till next, you know, next mid to late August, early September, and put the seed out at that time. Putting seed out in the springtime can be, you know, really frustrating because the ground is cold, and, you know, for the seed to get established is kind of tough.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones we go. We do have a couple minutes, and we do have some phone lines open, but let's head over to Richard's yard. Hi, Richard.
Is this the time of year you cut back hostas?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly do it. Once the foliage starts kind of going downhill, this is a time of year to you can certainly do it.
So it is the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I can cut them before they, you know, you cut the leaves off, right?
Correct. You don't have to. I mean, you can wait until they, you know, lay on the ground and stuff. But if you want to do it, they're pretty much past their, let's say, growing cycle. And so if you leave the foliage, it's going to help a little bit as far as the overall health, but not all that much. So you can, you know, you can cut them back basically to ground level right now.
And you also cut back all of the grass, the planted grasses, right?
It's a little bit early for that. I kind of wait on that a little bit. But with the hostas, you can do it. But the ornamental grasses, I'd wait until they start kind of breaking apart. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Sure. And then depending upon what type of ornamental grass you have, that's going to determine the height that you're going to cut them. Some of the smaller grasses, you're going to cut lower, but some of the bigger ones, like the maiden grasses, you're going to leave about a foot or so. And then realize the majority of the ornamental grasses are clump growers. So in other words, the center area will never put out new growth again. You only get new growth on the perimeter of the clump.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Thanks very much for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, it's kind of a surprise. You know, if you had a clump of an ornamental grass for, let's say, a couple of years, and you go out and you cut it, and you notice, well, there's no new blades coming out of the center. That's because that's what they do. They don't push out new growth in the center. So if you get an older, big clump, you basically what you have to do is dig up the entire big clump, chop out the center part that has no new foliage, and then consequently, you know, put the perimeter pieces back in the hole where they were if you're going to put them in the same, you know, same location. So that's one of the things. Another thing, too, this is a time of year where the summer bulbs, the caladiums, the cannas, the dahlias, and things like that, guess what? They're headed towards downhill. So they can stay, you know, but you're going to notice more and more of the leaves are going to start, you know, kind of going bad, not bad, just aesthetically bad. It doesn't really hurt them at all. And just be prepared to, you know, go ahead and bring those in. You know, some of them have to come inside. And I'm experimenting. A lady called last week when I said I was going to experiment with some of my elephant ears and just see if they could survive outside. And she said she's had luck with her elephant ears surviving outside. And Candace, you know, in my neighborhood, a lot of people have them planted in areas that are somewhat protected, and they, you know, are coming back really, really well. Caladiums, I've never, you know, known anybody that's been able to have their caladiums stay outside, but who knows? And the dahlias, the same sort of, you know, same kind of situation. Also, you know, this time of year, if you start noticing you've got a weed problem, just realize that your weeds are going to be, I don't want to say resistant to the herbicides, but the herbicides are going to become less and less effective as the temperatures go down because the weeds are absorbing less of, you know, that kind of situation. So just know that I put some herbicide down, some weed killer, weed be gone, or whatever it happens to be, and it's not really killing the weeds that you want to get rid of. So just be conscious of the fact that we're going through the transition right now, and some of the effectiveness of many different things is diminished with almost every day. So Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott, for the news and the weather update. And, oh, by the way, welcome. It is the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, and I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly. But right now, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about your plant material, your lawn, trees, shrubs, whatever it happens to be, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. By the way, thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss caring for ups and downs and all around annuals. Finally, I'm starting to see some pansies in multiple locations. I actually got a couple pansies, and I have some planted. Just a couple. I only got three or so. But they look good. Two yellows and one purplish one. Mwah. But anyway, your bulbs, it's still a little bit early to be putting your spring flowering bulbs in. So just hold up, hold back on those. And as I said in the last hour, your summer bulbs, if you have the elephant ears and the cannas and caladiums and dahlias and stuff like that, they're still fine as far as digging them up or anything else if you're going to do that. It's just that they're going to be going downhill. You're going to start to see the foliage and everything else kind of, well, gee whiz, those leaves just kind of came out of last week, and now they're already starting to turn downhill, go downhill. Oh, well, it doesn't matter because that's just their life cycle. And your ground covers. As I was walking through the neighborhood yesterday, somebody has some ivy, English ivy. I couldn't tell if it was English or Baltic ivy or Bulgarian ivy. But anyway, it's a ground cover, and they didn't like where it was growing, so they cut a bunch of it off and threw it out onto the sidewalk. I thought, that's interesting because the city does provide yard waste dumpsters and things like that. Or individual, if you don't have an alley slash dumpster, then they have individual trash cans for yard waste. So how about your lawn, your cool season lawns? They should be really taking off nicely. So in other words, your fescues and your bluegrasses, where the zoysias are still looking pretty good. They're not heading downhill yet, but just realize that it's going to be soon when they start doing that. Your shrubs, your trees, your roses, your vines, and everything else. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take to get success. It's just up to you, and I'll just offer you maybe some insight that might help you. Ashlyn, she's running the big board, so she's producing. So when you call, she just needs to know your first name, and that's pretty much it. Then she just puts it on the computer screen. And I do landscape consulting. Today, after the show, I'm headed down to Oakville, so you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. Probably phone number would be better because of all the complications that I'm having. Anyway, enough of that stuff, and we can schedule a walk and talk. I'll share 40-plus years of experience, and that relates to how your home is doing as far as your plant material. Tip of the Trowel is a special recognition for an individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting. Tip of the Trowel goes out to the Cardinals. It's nice to see them doing so well and having personal historic things as well as a team making the playoffs. So Tip of the Trowel goes out to the St. Louis Cardinals. And related to that, not related directly to the people that are on the team right now, I grow castor beans. And the original castor beans I got outside the stadium, not the stadium that they have right now, but the stadium previous to that, they had some huge castor bean plants. And I stole some castor bean seeds off the plants, and I'm still growing them. So this year I finally cut my castor beans down, and I still have my elephant ears and my cannas, but pretty much that's in. You know, I have some other things too, but the castor beans, I decided I got to do this one phase at a time because it's a pretty involved process, and so I took the castor beans out. Oh, it was really sad to do, but anyway, enough of that. So anyway, the tip of the trowel went out to the Cardinals for, you know, what a great season they've done, and you know, and made it very enjoyable for lots of different people. So, It's a little bit, why don't we go and take a call or two before we take a break? Let's head over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mike. A few questions real quick. So quite a few years ago on the north side of our house, I put out a 10-inch pot of impatiens, and they grow in that pot real well. Here, was that wild impatiens are coming up, and that's been probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I don't even put the pot there anymore, but I have an area of about 10 foot by 10 foot of huge impatiens that come up on their own every year. Is that normal? I thought those things, I mean, they die, of course, every winter,
right,
and go away, but then every spring they come right back up.
That is really kind of rare, because you don't think of impatiens. What you're describing is, in other words, a plant that would produce seed, then drop the seed, and like sweet alyssum and lots of plants do that, but I've never heard of, you know, impatiens doing that.
Yeah, I haven't either. And I mean, they're not only is it like a 10 foot by 10 foot area, they're like really, they're probably a foot or more tall in some areas.
Wow.
Of that. Yeah, kind of weird. But anyway, yeah. Secondly, I just laid some sod. Is it okay to put winterizer fertilizer on that as I do the rest of the lawn?
Well, it's going to be a little bit iffy if it's going to be, you know, effective at all. So I would say, how long ago did you put the sod down?
Just about a week ago.
No, I would not put the fertilizer on it. I would say it could have more of a detrimental effect than a, you know, positive effect. So I would wait. You still have plenty of time. You know, you can put winterizer type fertilizer even as late as around Thanksgiving. So on the cool season lawns, because they're going to be actively growing, you know, up to that point until we start getting the really super freezing cold weathers.
Okay. All right, and last comment, you know, the 800 number that you guys give out now, it doesn't work anymore. It says that number's been disconnected or whatever.
Really?
Just an FYI.
Wow. So that 800-925-1120 doesn't work?
Yeah, it does not work. I've called it numerous times. And it just says something like it's either been disconnected or, you know, whatever. I don't quite remember. But now I just call the regular number to get on. And it doesn't matter if it's your program or somebody else's on KMOX. It doesn't work.
Wow. That's really strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thanks.
At least on my end. So, yeah, no problem. Thanks.
Sure, I appreciate it. And, you know, you're calling from Illinois, so you'd hope to get the, you know, the, more or less the free line coming in. So, gosh, things are so weird. I can't figure it out. Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900. Blah, 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 blah. I can't give that other number out because I found out it doesn't work. Back after these messages. Back to the phones we go. Let's head over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hey, good morning, Mike. We talked briefly last week about elephant ears.
Oh, okay.
And I wanted to ask you if you knew that they have a flower and they bloom.
Well, I've never really had them flower except a very occasion. Let's say on a rare occasion. Let's put it that way, because it seems like the growing season is not long enough, you know, for them to actually, you know, put the flower stem out.
Well, peek in there right now, because now is the time of year that you see them.
Right.
And I have several on my plant, and I was trying to be quick, you know, on the radio, you got other people to take, and I forgot to tell you that they flower. I didn't know that until I saw one on my plant. I was, like, so surprised. So I just wanted to let you know that. I forgot to tell you that last weekend.
Yeah, they do, and I've seen them occasionally, but I mean, they're not spectacular flowers by any means.
Oh, no, no, no. This is a pretty yellow. It's about 4 inches long.
Right.
It kind of reminds me of a calla lily, sort of.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I forgot to tell you that last weekend. So, great show. Absolutely love it.
All right.
Go, Mike.
Well, thanks, Mary. And now let's go over to Carol's yard. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Yes, I have a couple questions.
Okay.
My first one is about my roses. They've been just blooming like crazy still. I was wondering when I should stop cutting the flowers off, or when do I, and then also when should I, like, some of them are really tall. When should I cut those back so the wind in the winter doesn't hurt those?
Oh, are these shrub roses, or are they like the classic?
No, they're like hybrid tea, Floribunda.
Oh, really? So basically, I would say, let them go. And as we get into towards the end of October, they're probably going to stop flowering as much. And that's the time when you want to, cut the stems back. And I'm assuming that you do mulching for the wintertime.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And I have one more question, and I'm sure you've answered this a million times, but I have not had my lawn aerated in about 4 years. When is the best time to do that, and how often really should I be doing that?
You can, for the first, since you haven't done it for a while, it wouldn't hurt to do it, every year for like a couple years.
Okay.
And you want fall, if you have a cool season lawn, fall's the time when you want to do it.
I just have a bluegrass lawn.
Yeah, that's a cool season lawn. So basically, anytime we can get into September and October, you can have it done then.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you very much. That was a big help.
Right.
Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's see what's going on with Dan. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
This past week, we bought a large Japanese maple from a local nursery. And it looked like it had maybe been established in the ground where they pulled it from. It had about a 30-inch root ball on the bottom of it. And we didn't realize it until we were planting it that it had a wire basket underneath of it. And it's heavy metal. And I was just checking to see. We actually tried to cut it away the best we could and then put it in the ground. Do you think that was okay to do that?
Yeah, it's not, it's not great to have done that, but it shouldn't. At least it wasn't a plastic, which you would see the plastic pot. But, the wire basket is, it was basically a field-grown tree. But one of that big, that thing must have weighed 10,000 pounds. I mean, I'm exaggerating.
It was heavy.
A little bit.
Yes, it was heavy. It was a ball and burlap, I guess you call it.
And hopefully when you planted it, you left about 10% of the top of the root ball above the surrounding ground.
Correct. Okay. Right. And should we add some root stimulator to it?
It's probably not going to do all that much good. You could do it if you want to, but it's going to psychologically help you more than it's going to help the tree, because the root systems is not really established enough. It doesn't have the feeder roots out there. So you're putting this stuff out, and the tree's going, well, that's great, but I don't have feeder roots right now because I've just been recently, transplanted. So that's kind of the disadvantage of doing it. It's more of a psychological thing for you than it is for the advantage to the tree.
Yeah, they told us that it may go into shock and lose its leaves. Does that sound correct?
Well, it could, because transplanting it's kind of like taking me from St. Louis and moving me up to the North Pole and saying, well, you might have some detrimental impact of going to a completely different environment. So that's probably, I would say it could lose the foliage, but this late in the season, I wouldn't worry too much about it. But the nice thing about doing the fall planting is the ground is warm, and that will trigger some of the, some feeder root growth, and that's what's essential. That's why fall planting is way much better than spring planting when the ground is cold.
Okay, super. All right, sounds like we're on the right track.
Yep, sounds like it.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Yep, my pleasure. And let's see. Let's go over to Donna's yard. Hi, Donna.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi,
I've got a few questions to ask you. I have a pink stellar kusa dogwood tree that I really like, and it's a pink coloring, but I wanted to know, is there a way to intensify the color of this tree?
No.
No? I thought maybe some kind of fertilizer or something.
No, it's not like some of the hydrangeas where you can put aluminum sulfate or something like that, which would turn them, a deeper blue. But no, with this... this is, you know, the color that's genetically kind of inbred in the thing. And so it was a result of where the original cutting was taken. It was this color of flower.
Okay. Another question I have is, I would like to transplant my raspberry bush. It's not a large. It's about a foot and a half wide. And I wanted to know, is now the time to transplant, or should I wait till spring? And if so, what would I put into the hole as far as soil is concerned? I know they do require acidic, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, but what you need to do is just make sure that it has, you know, some compost mixed into the, you know, location you're moving it. And why are you moving it?
Because it's more like in a shady area. It's not getting a lot of sun.
Right.
So I thought maybe more sun would really help it a lot. Also, I have another question, too. I would like to propagate a crepe myrtle and also a rose of Sharon bush, if possible. Is now the time to do it?
It's a kind of an involved process. You need to get a rooting hormone, first of all. You need to get small pots, like 4-inch pots, and you need to get some, you know, potting mix to go in there for starting plant materials. And then you take the cutting and make the cut at a 45-degree angle. Then you dip it into the rooting hormone, and then from that, then you put it into the, you know, into the potting mix. And then leave them in the pot. Just dig a small hole in a garden space, and just put the pot down into a hole for the wintertime for winter protection.
Okay. So yeah, that sounds like is now though the time of the year to do this, or should I wait till spring for that?
You could go ahead and give it a try this time of year.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's what I plan on doing. Okay, that's all I needed. Thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Enjoy your show.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. And
bye-bye.
Now let's see what's going on with Judith's yard. Hi, Judith.
Good morning, Mike. I have a couple of questions for you. I have spirea, the old-fashioned with the white flower, all along the side of my house. There's about 10 of them. And they've been in for 60 years. They're just beautiful when they bloom in the spring. It looks like a big waterfall.
Right.
And I normally cut them back after they bloom.
That's correct.
It is. Well, I heard you say earlier that spring flowering things should be cut back like now.
No, spring flowering, if you cut now, you're cutting off the flower buds for next year.
Well, that's what I thought. I must have misunderstood you. But that and my forsythia, I usually cut back after they've bloomed. So I'm doing it correctly.
You're right? Absolutely right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sure,
I appreciate your show.
Yeah. Anything that's, you know, spring flowering, the flower buds are being set right now, as well as the foliage buds. And you prune, and then there's no buds for the flowering. So you've been doing it correct for all these years. And, you know, it sounds like you been doing it really correct. If you've got spirea that is 60 years old, that's pretty darn old. Let's go now to Paul's yard. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Mike. I've got questions about planting three kinds of seeds. I bought a red plum at Schnucks the other day. Loved the taste of it. Can I plant that seed?
You could, but if to get success out of it, it's going to be really minimal.
Okay, let's jump to flowers. I harvested tulip seeds from tulips that I planted last year. Never had tulips before. And I swiped some cannas seeds from my neighbor. Am I going to waste time trying to propagate those seeds?
For the most part, yes. It's going to be a waste of time, especially with the tulips. The cannas, it's going to be forever and ever and ever. If they do germinate and you get any kind of, let's say, growth out of them, that it's actually going to look like a canna. So, yeah, you're just, I mean, it's kind of fun to play with, but success-wise, it's going to be minimal.
Yeah, I was looking at the fun, but if it's a waste of time, I'll just buy the plant.
Right.
Okay, thank you much.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KM Morris Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
We
Ashlyn and myself, we were talking about moonflowers. We've had some moonflowers and really been very, very happy with the flowers this year. We've probably had a couple hundred of the flowers. So let's head over to Jim's yard now. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mike. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I aerated my lawn Thursday, and I bought a bag of mixed fescue, which I'm going to put down today, and some granulated lime. Is that to do that good right now, or should I wait?
Well, why are you putting the lime down?
Well, to help sweeten the ground up a little bit.
Well, maybe it doesn't need it. Lawn really likes an acidic soil. People always think it needs to have more or less an alkaline soil, and that's why they put lime down. But if your soils are already, you know, let's say a positive pH as opposed to an acidic negative pH, you may be doing more harm than good by putting lime down, unless you've had a soil test done that tells you that you need to put lime down because your pH is low.
Okay. Then the next question, how long should a person keep grass seed?
Just every year that you keep it, you know, the percentage of germination just goes down.
Okay. But it's a good time of year right now. I could put this fescue grass seed down, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, man, you take care of yourself.
Well, sure. You do the very same thing.
From a Polaris submarine to a B-52 bomber. Thank you, brother.
Yes. And now let's go over to Terry's yard. Hi, Terry.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I got a question on two huge pin oaks in my backyard. One is like 50 years old and one is 100. The diameter on one is 40 inches and the other one's 50 inches. So they're huge. I had a tree service come out and it has gall disease. And I was wondering, Mike, three things. Can it kill the tree? They recommended an injection in June or July when the leaves are full, and will it come back next year?
Well, did they inject it or not?
No, they said that they would not inject till next year,
right.
And they recommended June or July.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's because the translocation up through the, you know, to the let's say the top of the tree where the galls are, that's the perfect time to do it. So that's great, but they don't really kill the tree per se. What they do is, you know, because you're going to see, you know, little twigs with the galls on them, and then also some branches, if you get too many galls on a branch, the weight of the gall can cause a little bit of crack, and then that crack, when it rains, could get some water in there and cause some, interior rotting. So that's where the problem comes in from the galls.
Okay. All right. And could it come back next year, Mike?
The trees?
The galls.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be there basically forever. Once you get them, those are little tiny wasps, not the classic looking wasp. But when the galls, you know, when those galls, that contains the eggs. And then when those hatch, they pretty much stay around the same, you know, I don't want to say neighborhood, but same trees a lot of time that they were born in. The only time they end up someplace else is if the wind blows them. And then, you know, and it's basically the red oak group is the only group of trees that are impacted by them.
The red oak, did you say?
Yeah. Red oaks just in general as opposed to the white oaks. So the red oaks are the pin oaks and, you know, trees of that type. So you're not going to see galls on any of the white oak group.
Okay. And you don't think, I mean, anything can happen, but you don't think that could kill those two trees, right?
Well, they're old and there's other, you know, there's circumstances. Like I said, if you get too many galls on them, then the weight of the gall can cause just slight cracks of the twigs and everything. And then you get moisture from rain and stuff. And then.
Okay.
So the galls in and of themselves don't kill, no.
Okay, and you kind of think the injection in June, July will help, maybe?
Yes, I mean these trees are huge, so that's
going
to translocate from where they're putting the injection in all the way up to the, you know, to basically the top, and that's where most of the galls are probably.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. And Mike, the other question I have real quick is amaryllis bulbs. How do you winterize them?
You can do it a couple, you know, different ways. The easiest way is, you know, I'm assuming they've already flowered. They've already had foliage. Just bring them inside, cut the leaves off of them and leave about a stub of above the bulb of about 1 to 2 inches. And then that's all you really need to do. And you can leave them in the pot if you want.
Okay. And I took them out of the pot already. Can I put them in like a box or a brown bag or something?
You could do that, yes.
Okay, doesn't matter. Okay. And do they need darkness or no?
Well, they don't really. I mean, you can do that, but it's up to
you. Okay, very, very good. Mike, thanks again. You've been a big help.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, it's all right. I mean, putting them in the dark just means you don't have to look at the, I don't want to say ugly, but the bulb that has nothing to it.
Yeah, okay. All right, sounds good. I just didn't know whether to put it in, like, vermiculite or if I can just put them in a brown bag.
You can just leave them, like I said, you can leave them in the pot that they were growing in.
I mean, well, I already took them out last week.
Right. So in the future, you can just leave them and just, you know, cut the foliage off and then just set that pot someplace in the basement or whatever.
Okay. Sounds real good. Thanks again, Mike.
All right. And now let's see. Where should we go? Let's go over to Craig's yard. Hi, Craig.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
You mentioned earlier in your show English ivy as a ground cover. I have a home in the country, and I have a ditch across part of the front lawn, and it's really steep. It's difficult to mow with even a push mower, and I've considered putting in a ground cover or even putting in maybe riprap or decorative rock. If I was going to use English ivy, how would that work in an area that's in full sun?
I mean, it could survive, but it's just getting it established on a steep slope is going to be iffy at best. So that's where your trouble is going to be to get it established.
Okay. Do you have something that you could recommend?
On a steep slope, you know, that's what's growing there now? Let's put it that way.
It's grass.
Okay. I know it's really difficult, but I would just leave the grass there and, you know, if anything, I'd get some, you know, Dutch white clover or something if this is in full sun, and just leave the grass and throw some clover seed in there and just try to let the clover get established. And, you know, I wouldn't try to put any kind of individual plants or, you know, anything other than like a clover circumstance.
So will the Dutch white clover invade into the rest of the lawn?
It could, yes. But it's going to be a slow involved process.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to it so you don't, you know, once the Dutch white clover gets established, then, you know, that eliminates a mowing of this steep slope that you're talking about.
Right, right. Okay. Well, I can mow it with a push mower, but it's a pretty tough job to do.
Right. So, I mean, you could go ahead and keep doing it. I mean, it's better than having a membership in a gymnasium.
That's true. That's true. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Brad's yard. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Mike. I had a question. I was looking for a little kind of a screen or block between me and some neighbors. And I was looking maybe 10 or 12 feet tall, and I was looking at the clumping bamboo. Is that a good choice?
Ooh. The clumping bamboo, I mean, that's not invasive like the, you know, some of the other ones, but it's going to be a you know, kind of a long, involved process, and you're going to need to buy a lot of it because since it's clumping, it doesn't send out rhizomes and become invasive like some of the other types.
Okay.
So
does it grow quickly?
Relatively.
Like couple, 3 feet a year or something like that?
Yeah, no, not that much. First couple of years, you're probably going to get maybe an inch or so at the most.
Okay.
And after that, you're going to get probably 6 inches at the most each year.
Oh, okay. Would you have any better recommendation then?
How about the upright arborvitae?
Yeah, but then that doesn't get real wide, does it?
Well, I mean, they're going to get 3 or 4 feet wide. It's going to be a lot wider than the bamboo you're talking about.
Oh, okay. So I had also looked at a magnolia, possibly.
Like the evergreen magnolia?
Yes.
That's going to get way too big.
Too tall, you mean?
Too wide, too tall, too everything.
Okay. Does that grow quickly, though?
Nothing's going to grow quickly, to be honest. When we talk quick, it's going to be anything that's recently installed is going to take a couple years to get its root system established before it even does the normal type of growth. But there's nothing you can put in the ground that you can expect any kind of growth for the first couple years or any kind of growth that's going to be significant.
Okay. Upright arborvitae.
Right.
Okay. All right. I'll look into that. Thank you for your help then.
Yeah, there's a variety of arborvitae called green giant. Now, they get massive. They get really tall. But they're after the first 2 years or so, they're going to be fairly fast-growing height-wise.
Okay. Another sort of mimosa, would that work?
They're really open in their habit, so it's not going to really give you any kind of screening or blocking or anything.
I see. How tall do they typically get?
Maybe 15 feet.
Oh, that's about perfect. Okay. But,
I mean, they're really open in their habit, and their foliage is really kind of airy, so it's not going to really block your view.
Gotcha. Okay. Good information. Thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go. Let's head over to Don's yard. Hi, Don.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know, is it too late to plant tulips?
No, it's too early.
Oh, it's too early.
Right.
To put them in the ground, huh?
Right. You put them in too soon, too early. The ground is still too warm. And then consequently,
yes,
it could force them to break their dormancy of the bulb. And then that means nothing for next year. So wait until a little bit later on, closer to Halloween. Then you got the whole month of November to put them in the ground after that.
Oh, put them in November.
Yeah, you can put them in, the end of this month, or all the way through November. The only time when you should really stop putting them in the ground is when the ground starts freezing. That's not a good time.
Okay, I'll put them in middle of October then.
That's fine, yeah. But
on cannons, can you split cannons and transplant them so they'll be ready for next year from one spot to another?
Well, if you transplant them, is it a variety and a location that you know that you've had success with them? Are you talking about leaving them outside for the wintertime?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
yes, sir.
And you've had luck with it in the past?
Yes, sir.
I would say wait and don't do any kind of division. Don't do anything at all. Wait until next year when they start coming up. Then do the division and move them to the new location.
Oh, okay, because I made a mistake and put them in a new location already. Oh,
well, if you've done that already, just kind of keep your fingers crossed. But, digging them up and disrupting the root system and everything else may be detrimental, depending upon our weather and everything. So.
Oh, okay. I see. All right, then. All right, then. You answer my question.
Okay.
I thank you so much for taking my call.
My pleasure. And now let's head to Sue's yard. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask, I had to have two trees removed the end of April, and now I've got the stump, the ground out. I'm wondering, I know I'm going to have to bring some dirt in. Should I do that now or wait till spring to plant, or what should I do?
You're talking about planting grass seed?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not going to work anyway. So even though you've got all the stump grindings out that you could possibly, there's still a huge amount of wood in that ground right there, and that's detrimental to any kind of plant material whatsoever. So right in that location, you're not going to have much success doing whether you bring in a plant, whether you bring in sod, whether you bring in seed. It's still just kind of a bad spot.
Even if I bring dirt in and put over it?
Yeah, because you're just still The root system's got to go through, going to go through the dirt, but it's got to get past what the dirt, you know, whatever depth the dirt is, and then it's going to get in. What happens is pieces of wood or old root systems and stuff, as it starts imploding slash dying, then as that breakdown process happens, consequently, then it, you know, it's detrimental for any kind of plant material's root system.
Oh, and that's right in front of my house, my front yard.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be bad news. Maybe put a, you know, bird bath or, you know, gazing balls or something like that, but you're not going to get any plant material for a couple of years. I mean, realistically, you can fool around with it if you want to. I mean, if you want to go get some sod or you want to get some dirt and stuff, but it's really going to be sad.
Okay. If I do that, should I just wait till spring?
No, I mean, it's up to you. I would get some, you know, mix some soil in, get some compost topsoil mix, and mix it in with the existing soil, and then wait until the springtime before I did any kind of planting.
Okay. Okay. I was hoping for better news, but.
Well, I can make up a story.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah, nothing works better than planting on, you know, kind of pieces of bark and all shading. And no, anyway. Dennis, could you do it kind of quick?
Yes, I can. I have a lot of Lespedeza growing on my property, and I was told that that will take over all other grasses. Do you need to just kill that stuff and wait till next spring to plant grass seed there?
I would say if you kill it, then you're going to have big, you know, big dead spots, and herbicides are going to be somewhat ineffective this time of year. So I would go, you know, wait until it's more actively growing and kill it at that time. And it's going to be a long, involved process. Where did you get it from?
Back in the 60s, the Missouri Conservation pushed Lespedeza, and it was planted back then. And I just noticed it's coming into my yard from other fields. And, It is kind of taken over, so.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly what I bought, but they said that I would need to kill it because it'll take over.
Right.
The grasses it is, that
you
know,
it can
that you want.
Be aggressive, so just be, you know, be conscious of that. So, I mean, it's just going to be a long, involved process to get that, you know, killed off and get something new established in that situation. So, I want to
think. Okay, one other quick thing. I have different kinds of, like a Bradford pear type tree, I guess. I heard there's some that are okay. Maybe not a Bradford pear, but there's some pear trees that are okay and some that aren't.
Well, for the most part, they're, you know, kind of detrimental. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us three times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.